your subject line in an email is the new eye contact. The quick recap email after a great meeting is the new virtual handshake, even if it was in person. And I think one of the things I've learned and where people have struggled in hybrid work is they've had to be really challenged to ask, how do we make in-person gatherings and meetings so much better?
This is Inclusion Begins With Me, conversations that matter. I'm your host, Dr. Cindy Pace, Vice President and Global Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at MetLife. Who has the power to make a difference? Can anyone be a leader? How do we work together now that the future is here? From our communication style to the way we connect with colleagues and lead teams, inclusion impacts our everyday lives. How do we practice inclusive behaviors and make ourselves better humans in the workplace? We've always believed that it starts with a conversation. Welcome to season 3 of Inclusion Begins With Me. You know, when we started this show in 2022, we were fresh out of a pandemic. Barely anyone was back in the office, and my goal was to offer a resource that anyone could use to create inclusion. That includes, you know, someone on their first day, to a CEO who has been in the industry for 30 years. Over the past 36 episodes, we've covered belonging, power, leadership, mentorship, connection, purpose, and so much more. And now, 2 years later, I feel we've settled in to a hybrid working world. Our guests have been telling us for a while that the future of work is here, but of course, there are still plenty of questions about how to navigate it. And here to answer those questions about a world of work that now includes at least 4 separate generations, Gen Z, Millennials, Gen X, and Baby Boomers, is Erica Dewan. Erica describes us all as immigrants to this new world of work.
So my origin story, you know, I grew up as a very shy and introverted immigrant girl in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My parents were Indian immigrants. So at home, we spoke Hindi, which meant when I got to school, I had accented English. I was the quietest kid in the class. But I feel that part of my journey of fitting in or truly finding what it means to belong really started because I was so shy. I was a really good observer. And one of the things I really got good at was observing body language. And, you know, fast forward, I think my own struggles and my journey with that really allowed me over time to become really good at being a connector across difference, to be passionate about being a bridge builder across silos or different disciplines or areas of work. And that one of the greatest opportunities we all have is to connect sometimes the more unlikely, seemingly unusual groups of people or ideas that actually creates the greatest impact. So much of my childhood was very much about success from an external perspective, from an immigrant perspective. And I ended up doing my master's research at Harvard and staying on as a researcher to look at what are those newer leadership skills that are critical for our 21st century era? I kept finding that so many leaders kept asking me the same questions. How do I improve communication across generations? How do we manage all of this digital stuff that we're going through? How do I get people to build trust with me? And what I realized, especially in the last 5 to 7 years, is that the body of our language is changing. And it's not just about the handshake, the head nod, and the lean in anymore. There's a whole new set of cues and signals that I call digital body language that really make up the handshake, the head nod, and lean in of the business world today. And so my work has really involved not only from looking at better skills for connection and collaboration at work, but really the science of how do we truly build more human connection in this truly digital era? And really, that's what I'm all about. I like to say, just like I was an immigrant to traditional body language as a kid in my origin story, today we're all immigrants to the new world of our digital body language.
I like how you said that. And I wrote down a few things. One is that the nature of how we understand body language has shifted. And it's dynamic. So it's probably been changes every time there's a new technological advancement or any type of, you know, transformation in society has required us to operate different, you know, from an agricultural society to an information society or an industrial society. We shifted, right? There are ways that we're talking. And now moving from, you know, we've been in the knowledge age, but the knowledge age has shifted. And with the different generations in the workplace, we lean on what we know, sometimes not what we're seeing change. And so, you know, hearing you say that, and I would say elevating that in our minds to know that this is something we really need to intentionally work on and focus on is really key. Adding on top of that, Erica, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how are you seeing digital body language shift in the hybrid workplace?
Yeah, great question. You know, I started researching digital body language back in 2015. So it has been a journey of evolution. You know, at first I thought digital body language would be a complement to traditional body language. You know, we all meet in person. That's how we do business. And we also have these emails and we sometimes have these conference calls, and it's a complement to deepen connection, to sustain connections when you're not in person. But what I really learned now in the hybrid world is our digital body language is actually changing our traditional body language. Because research shows we spend roughly 70% of our time communicating digitally or in a hybrid way first with our colleagues than traditionally in person. This general way of, I like to say, is no longer the first impression is the first handshake. It's the first email you write. It's the first 3 minutes of your video call. It's knowing that the quality of your subject line in an email is the new eye contact. The quick recap email after a great meeting is the new virtual handshake, even if it was in person. And I think one of the things I've learned and where people have struggled in hybrid work is they've had to be really challenged to ask, how do we make in-person gatherings and meetings so much better? Because what we've learned in a virtual environment where we're not all just coming back in person and our door shut because we're on video calls, or having the same meeting where people nod their heads and then there was no agenda and no summary and nothing got done afterwards. But instead, we're really making these meetings and connections matter even more. And a lot of that is having that note taker summarizing all the next steps, sending it out within 15 minutes digitally, or making sure we have a live host and remote host, and we have the remote host lead the first half of the meeting. So we're reducing our proximity bias, which always existed in work, but we're just more thoughtful about it in hybrid work. So those are just some of the examples. But I think the general shift I've seen is our digital body language is now reshaping our traditional body language. It's not the way it was 5-6 years ago.
I feel like this is also a therapy session for me. Thank you so much, Erica, because I was beginning to question, why is it that I know I said something and I remember saying it, and then people are interpreting it very differently.
Yeah.
And so this understanding that the way communication and the way people are making meaning is very different than the long form type of conversation that I'm used. That's how I grew up. You know, that's how I came into business. When you sat and had a conversation with someone and you all agreed to something, you walked out of the door and you knew that you agreed to it.
That's right.
Well, I have now realized that doesn't actually, that's not the case anymore. And so it is a following up.
Yeah.
Great that we had our conversation, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, and action item and date that we, you know, very specific, very detailed is what people are looking for. And it's, I'm not saying it had never been there before, but it was a different way of getting to the detail, getting to the point. Let me go to the email because I have a question for you around emails and connection. So that's when it comes to technology, we're seeing how AI, generative AI, is being used to help with emails. What would be, if you could give us Here's something that helps connect people, helps them feel seen, heard, valued, included. Make sure you do this. What would you say the top things we need to be focusing on in our email communications?
Yeah, I think first, we need to be thoughtful of the natural or preferred communication style of the person we're sending it to. I like to say when it comes to digital body language, we're not all the same, just like traditional body language. There are those I call more of the digital body language natives and those I call the digital body language adapters. A digital body language native is someone who they tend to skew younger, but they're not all young people. They like brief, short, fast messages to the point. They hate voicemails. They hate phone calls out of the blue. They value that quick response. It doesn't have to be long. You know, on the other end of the spectrum are digital adapters. They prefer in person. They have more reluctance to more technology. They really love that quick unplanned phone call. And, you know, I think the first step, especially when we have to bring tone back to our digital communications because they can't hear the intonation in our voice, is really thinking about who am I sending this to, you know, and knowing your audience. And when we meet someone in person and someone smiles, we mimic back their body language. We smile back. If they lean in, we lean in too. And it's making sure we're not tone deaf when we're shooting something out. So I think always starting with that, you know, what type of tone am I sending? Who am I sending this to? Is this my assistant where we have high trust, where I can just get to the point, or a peer? Is this someone I've never worked with before that I'm trying to build a relationship with?
I love these terms that Erica has set up, digital natives and digital adapters. If we understand which category a person falls into, we can better understand one another and improve communication. Remember these terms because we'll come back to them later.
People read their messages in email like they skim websites. So it's a skimming, use bold underline headings,
preview.
Right? That clear, what's the point in the first two lines? Having a clear subject line is the new eye contact.
Yes.
And then know the tone. Ask yourself, how much do we trust each other and what's our power level? And, you know, what am I hoping? What's my intention with this email? Use the technologies that we have with generative AI. But don't rely on them. Use your human judgment.
Right.
And it's the power of both that is going to allow us to get to that next level. I also am just a big fan of making sure that we're not cookie cutter in this era, because those individuals that just try to have those copy and paste messages will not win. It's customized, thoughtful idea sharing that will really win in this era. And, you know, with more that can be automated, I think the true leaders that will stand out are those that bring that creative thinking, that connecting of different silos or disciplines, and that strategic insight that we won't get through a traditional tool. And I'll give you an example of this, you know, of human judgment. I'll never forget, years ago, there was a tragic shooting in Australia. And during that time, many individuals in the city of Sydney were, it happened in Sydney, and they were running to get into offices or rushing home because it was right downtown. And during that time, the Ubers, you know, the car service was available, but the prices shot up like crazy, like 10x, because it was right in the middle of the shooting. And it was an example of where, you know, technological tools were being used to adjust the pricing of a car service, but there was no human judgment around the human crisis that was happening in that city. And so, you know, again, I think more than ever, it's that human judgment plus the thoughtful use of tools in generative AI that will get us to the next level.
Subject line is the new eye contact. I love all of these analogies between the way work gets done in person and the way work gets done virtually. There are still ways to show emotion, respect, creativity, and we can use technology as a tool to do it. Erica has been stressing the importance of email, and I love that because we can all relate. I hate those emails in my inbox where the subject line is re. Like, where is the subject? If we each take an extra couple of minutes to carefully consider the way we communicate, it'll improve productivity and inclusivity for everyone tenfold.
I think a big part of this is also the fact that in our world of constant digital communication, many individuals tend to prioritize hastiness over thoughtfulness. How do I just quickly get this out versus being able to know when to slow down? When we were in person with human body language, we knew how to let someone think when they were stroking their chin or furrowing their eyebrows. Now, sometimes it almost feels like the fastest person to respond is the new version of FaceTime. And so a big part of how we work today is to make sure that we slow down in those moments for thoughtfulness and know how to be clear when things are urgent as well.
I love that. And the different ways in which people want to be connected with. How do you communicate with them? Some people are email. Some people are text by phone. Some people are chat, whatever you use in your organization, whether it's, you know, Yammer, Teams, Slack, whatever. And so knowing that some people are not on all the time.
That's right.
So they may be in a meeting and you're pinging, how's it going? It's like, I'm actually meeting with the board right now.
That's right.
So I'll get back to you.
Yeah. When we, you know, when we see someone in person, we know if they're excited or on the verge of tears and we know how to engage. But in asynchronous work versus synchronous work, we have no idea how they feel when we shoot off that email. And I think a lot of this requires us to, again, assume the best intent, to check our bias. There's actually a scientific study that showed that we tend to hold our breath when we check email. Think about that.
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
We're not as patient. We're not as, you know, as connected. And that often creates a lot of digital anxiety. I'll never forget, I do a lot of executive coaching and I was working with a leader who got some feedback that her empathy was weak in a 360 performance evaluation. And I look for all the traditional markers of subpar empathy, you know, how she engaged, how she asked questions, how she connected with those on her team. And turns out when she was in person, she was great at all this. She had wonderful body language. She asked good questions. She listened. But while her traditional body language was great, her digital body language was abysmal. She would send the brief email saying, where is this? I need it now, you know, in an email because she was just rushing. Or she would send an all caps text, but she was getting on a flight. So she was just trying to get it out, not thinking about punctuation or all caps. And it freaked out often those junior teammates on it, on her team that felt like it was shouting. And so she realized that she, again, had to learn a whole new way to lead and connect now.
Oh, my goodness. I could understand and empathize with what happens when there's a sense of urgency and how it's a whole nother demeanor that people may not necessarily see when they've been around you and they've had the time and they can come into your office and you have those conversations before the meeting starts or you're meeting up in the cafe area and having, you know, a catch-up time or chit-chat. When that is stripped away, when people are used to engaging with you that way, and that's stripped away and you're just, to your point, only digital, it's like another person to the point that we read it differently because we're like, are they okay? Is does something happen? So understanding how to be consistent with all the different forms that we have of communicating is essential.
Yeah. And I think a big, the challenge I often talk to leaders about today is it's not about one or another. You know, we can't just, try to get everyone back in the office or try to do everything remote. It's the skill of being able to navigate all of these tools, to know when to switch the channel, to know when a quick phone call is worth 1,000 emails.
Ooh.
That will allow us to get to that next level.
Well said. So now I want to shift to another topic that I know that you are very well versed in, generations at work.
Yeah.
And there's been some interesting information coming out. It's not that we didn't know this, but I think it is understanding the needs and wants of the generations that while there may be some similarities and there may be wants that are exactly the same, I think the intensity of the need of that motivation is different. And so what I mean by that is most recently I came across EY's Belonging Barometer. Great report. And one of the things that it talked about was the importance of a sense of belonging through workplace interactions for Gen Z. And then on top of that, that diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's not an option. It's a must have. And this wanting to do and be involved in meaningful work is essential. So people might read that and say, oh, okay, it's the how we make that happen, when that might not have been the case for who's managing you or also who's on the team with you.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do in a quick fire way is ask you a few questions about the generations at work,
mm-hmm.
and the need for inclusion, the need for belonging and purpose, and how does that look? Mm-hmm. And then we can also bring in some intersectionality, Erica, because I know that you work across, as you say, all types of differences. So let's start first to say, I want to know from you, we talk about generations in the workplace. What are the generations?
Yeah, I like to say generations are really simply a manifestation of the way the world is changing. And, they're bucketed. We tend to have four in the workplace currently, Gen Z, which are those that have primarily been born. They're in the workplace now, somewhere right around, 2000 onwards. Then we have millennials, born 1980 to 2000. Then we have Gen Xers, born, a mix between 1965 to 1980 to 85. And after that, we have baby boomers. And then, of course, traditionalists after, who some are in the workforce. So we really have five generations in the workforce.
Oh, okay.
I am someone who tends to be very careful when I talk about generations, because what I just described is sort of an academic way of framing and labeling different age groups.
Okay.
But if you look at millennials born 1980 to 2000, a group that spans 20 years is not all the same. They've had different experiences. And those that may be much more elder millennials, born in the pre-digital revolution era, the pre-internet era, the world right. of landlines and AOL Instant Messenger, I would say are completely different than those born in 1995, who grew up in the social media age, where talking is texting first and learning is through video games. And so, 2 years ago, I wrote an article where I talked about a phrase I call geriatric millennials,
right.
which I define as a micro generation of the millennials.
Earlier, Erica talked about digital natives and digital adapters. Within one generation, you can have both of these types of people. And Erica says that they can help bridge the gap between the generations before and after them.
When you look at the millennials category, a category that spans 20 years, they're really not all the same. They're a mix. Those that tend to skew older or more elder, or a fun way to say it is geriatric millennials, tend to be born more between 1980 and 1985. And what's unique about this specific micro generation of the millennials is they were born, you know, before the true internet digital revolution. You know, they still remember mm-hmm. the landline, the calling cards, but they were on the precipice of the digital age. So, you know, the first 20 years of their life was sort of much more pre-digital. And then their workplace life was the onset of social media. They were the first to use Facebook and Twitter and all these other tools. And, you know, in this moment of hybrid work, what I found is many of the elder millennials were really great bridge builders between in-person hybrid work and remote work, because they were often just as good at reading traditional body language because they had spent the first 20 years of their life priority mainly using traditional body language. They knew when to pick up that phone and have that conversation versus just sending a Slack message. But they also knew when to maybe have their team use a group chat tool because they were running a team of Gen Zers versus getting everyone back in the office for a 30-minute meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's having that sensibility between the adapters and natives is something that I think the elder millennials tend to be very good at. But again, I really want to be cautious because it's easy to put labels.
Right.
And I think that it's not just elder millennials that are good at this. I think it's an intersectionality of so many of us, but it gives us a way to really think about stages and phases of shifts.
I really like that. Going back to the bridging, because I think that's a huge part of, you know, the podcast is about inclusion begins with me. That is an element of being included or inclusive. So can you say more about why it's crucial to be able to have people that have capability to be bridge builders across these generational gaps in the workplace?
You know, we're living in a time where we have so many different communication styles at work, whether it's generational based or just background based. And as a part of that, it unintentionally in many ways created more divides than inclusion. You know, we think about technology as a driver of inclusion, but sometimes I've seen with teams, we've used all these tools in a way that we feel more isolated and disconnected, like that group reply all email chain where no one really shared their opinion, or that, you know, 30 person meeting where only two people actually talked. And so when I think about bridge building, I believe it is the core leadership skill of our time. And that's why inclusion, you know, is such an important skill that we have to look for and we have to detect. And I think inclusion is partly about the intuiting and the sensing and the listening, but it's also about being able to serve as a super connector across differences and knowing how to bring different perspectives in the right ways.
Erica gives a great example of how leaders can be inclusive to multiple communication styles.
I was working with a client, his name is Brad, and he has two direct reports, Dave and Allie. And Brad is a digital adapter. He's a total in-person guy, you know, senior leader, used to a traditional way of the way a corporation worked. And, you know, as a digital adapter, he has two direct reports, Allie, who is also a digital adapter, and Dave, who's very much a digital native. And they use Slack, which is an internal communication tool for their teams. And when Brad looks at Allie's team Slack channel, it's beautiful because it's governed by Allie. It has perfect punctuation, meeting notes, summaries. He knows exactly what's going on. When he looks at Dave's team Slack channel, it's completely confusing. There's GIFs and emojis and hashtags. At first, he was concerned whether they were really doing any work. But then at the end of the quarter, he assessed the quality and output of both teams, and he realized it was equal. And he realized that if he were to force Dave and his team to be more like Allie because it made him comfortable, it would actually reduce the authenticity and the creativity of that team.
Mm.
And what he really learned is to be a great bridge builder is to get comfortable being a bit uncomfortable.
So as we close out today, you know, we always like to send our listeners out into the world with something that they can do, some actions that they can immediately take And since we have you today, I would love for you to leave us with what actions can we all take to communicate differently and bridge generational gaps?
Yeah.
What are maybe two things that we can do immediately to improve inclusion in our workplaces?
Yeah. I'll give you three. The first is remember to choose clarity over brevity. The pressure to communicate quickly can lead many of us to lose context, and bringing the tone back will allow us all to thrive. Second, don't forget to show gratitude. Remember, a digital native will feel gratitude and recognition very differently than a digital adapter. So have different styles to show gratitude. And last but not least, don't be hasty, be thoughtful. Remember when it's time to slow down, to give space for thoughtfulness over hastiness.
There you have it. Thank you, Erica. It has been awesome.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you all for joining me on this episode of Inclusion Begins With Me, Conversations That Matter. You can learn more about Erica DeWan and all of our guests at MetLife.com. At MetLife, we are committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we believe making a difference in the lives of our customers, community, and the world around us is altogether possible. Learn more and join us at MetLife.com. The link is in our show notes. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Inclusion Begins With Me, Conversations That Matter, on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. I hope you also take the time to rate and leave our show a review. Before we go, we'd like to thank our podcast partner, Human Group Media, who helped us produce this show. That's it for today's episode. I hope you join me in the next one.